All right, so let's take up something we were doing on Friday. I want to maybe work it out a little more. In the Mora, we were doing for the past couple weeks about the sections on the attributes of God. Okay, so in book one, chapter 54. The Ram talks about about the Yigim Amidas. Okay, and the question of how do you have the whole point of these chapters is to explain that there's no such thing as has attributes, and you can't say essential attributes. It's a contradiction in terms. So how is it that the Torah has these midos, the Yud Gimel midos? Okay. And what's the correct interpretation of them? And why should the Torah use midos when there really is no such thing? So let's see. So he starts out that Moshe asks for two things, right? Okay. Let's pick it up on the. He said, like, the second paragraph. Moses prayed to God to grant him knowledge of his attributes and also pardon his people. When the latter had been granted, he continued to pray for knowledge of God's essence. In the words, show me thy glory. Okay. The following favorable. And then received, respecting his request, show me thy way, the following favorable reply. I will make all my goodness to pass before you. Okay. As regards to the second request, I was told, thou cannot see my face. The words all, so we're gonna focus on the show me thy way. The words, all my goodness, imply that God promised to show him the whole creation, concerning which it has been stated, and God saw everything that he had made, and behold, it was very good. When I say to show him the creation, I mean to imply that God promised to make him comprehend the nature of all things, their relation to each other, and the way they are governed by God, both in reference to the universe as a whole, and to each creature in particular. Okay. Consequently, the knowledge of the works of God is the knowledge of his attributes by which he can be known. Okay, because that's what he's saying. That was the knowledge that I skipped the first paragraph. Yeah, you have to go over it, but I'm trying to get to the part that we want to focus on. We're running out of time, but saying that that the knowledge of that God gave Moshe was the knowledge of his works, right? The knowledge of the works of God is the knowledge of his attributes, by which he can be known. The fact that God promised Moses to give him a knowledge of his works may be inferred from the circumstance that God taught him such attributes as refer exclusively to his works. Okay, in other words, Moshe asked for, sounds like a very, very general statement, right? He wants to know his way. So he gave, the response was certain kind of an answer, right? It's a limited answer. It's merciful, gracious, long-suffering, abundant in goodness. So the Rambam is saying, what type of knowledge is that? That's knowledge of how God relates to his creation, right? So you see that the fact that God promised Moses to give him a knowledge of his works may be inferred from the circumstances that God taught him such attributes as refer exclusively to his works. He's not teaching him other types of attributes. He's teaching him attributes in terms of how God is knowing with the Brios.
And what's important is the things he
creates? He starts out with works in a general sense, right? He says works means the whole of creation. Mm-hmm. But he focuses on, I mean to imply that God promised to make him comprehend the nature of all things, their relation to each other, and the way they are governed by God, both in reference to the universe as a whole and to each creature in particular. Okay. This knowledge is referred to when we are told of Moses, he is firmly established in all my house. That is, his knowledge of all creatures in my universe is correct and firmly established. Consequently, the knowledge of the works of God is the knowledge of his attributes, by which he can be known. The fact that God promised Moses to give him a knowledge of his works may be inferred from the circumstance that God taught him such attributes as refer exclusively to his works, saying, in the Yud Gimel Midos, those particularly are expressions that relate to God's works. He means over here in terms of how God is knowing with the does he have a better expression over here? God's works. Maisei Hashem? What do you mean by God's works? Where he says Chanan V'Rachum Erech Apayim. Right. Works, he means Maisei Hashem. Doesn't mean like the thing itself. Not the thing, right? It is therefore clear that the ways which Moses wished to know, which God taught him, are the actions emanating from God. Okay, he clarifies in the English, it gets clear as you read. Our sages call them midot, and speak of the 13 midos of God. They use the term also in reference to man. There are 4 different midos among those who go to the house of learning. There are 4 different midos among those who give charity. So they do not mean to say that God really possesses midos, but that he performs actions similar to such of our actions as originate in certain qualities, in certain psychical dispositions. Not that God has really such dispositions. So he's showing you an interesting thing, that Chazal call them the Yud Gimel Midos, and they also say that people have midos. So that seems to be a problematic in the Rambam's philosophy over here, right? Then how can you say that we have something and God has something? Midos. So he's explaining that when they say that God has midos, doesn't mean that he has these midos, right? But what? He performs actions similar to such of our actions as originate in certain qualities, i.e. in certain psychical dispositions. Not that God has such dispositions. Okay? So he would do something that we would look at and say about somebody that stems from his disposition. Okay? But it doesn't stem from any disposition in God, because that would be that God would have a superadded quality of that emotion. Okay? So, I mean, he's getting out of the problem, right? I mean, he's avoiding the blasphemy, but what exactly is the point, and what exactly is the message? Right? So then why say it? Why say midos if it doesn't mean that, right? Okay. Question is, what do you mean he has, what does it mean he has midos? Saying it doesn't mean he has midos that he really has midos, right? Just that he does actions that we would say look like coming from somebody's from a midah. But that's not really true. So why is the term used? Okay. Why do you have a term that you just have to negate? What is the positive thing that we can see? What we have to negate? What is the positive thing that we're getting out of this? Although Moses was shown all his goodness, i.e., all his works, only the 13 midos are mentioned. So he holds. He's saying that Moshe really got more information, but the Torah is only recording the 13 midos because they include those acts of God which refer to the creation and the government of mankind. And to know these acts was the principal object of the prayer of Moses. Okay, that I may know thee, that I may find grace in thy sight, and consider that this nation is thy people. That is to say, the people whom I have to rule by certain acts, and the performance of which I must be guided by your own acts in governing them. Okay, so he's saying that Moshe's main, what Moshe's reason to have a request in the first place was governance. Right? He says, I have to govern, I have to lead the people. So he wants to know the proper way to lead, the proper way to govern. So he's saying, I need to know your midos, I need to know the way you govern in order that I can govern, right? I have to rule by certain acts, in the performance of which I must be guided by thy own acts in governing them. So the Rambam is saying that the Yud Gimel Midos then is a description of the acts of government of God, right? And Moshe, to be the proper leader, needed that information. He needed to understand that. We have thus shown that the ways used in the Bible and Midos used in the Mishnah are identical. Meaning to say, show me your ways. Right? Show me your ways. Show me your way is the same as what? This we had trouble with in the... is the same as Midos used in the Mishnah. Denoting the acts emanating from God in reference to the universe. Yeah. I think the English translation was a little misleading, right? Because it doesn't say in the Hebrew Midos used in the Mishnah. Because Midos used in the Mishnah is about people. And his whole point was it's not the same. Isn't that his whole point? But he means to say that when Chazal speak about the Yud Gimel Midos, it's the same thing as the as show me your way. Meaning to say what? Acts emanating from God in reference to the universe. That's what we mean by his way, and that's what we mean by his midos. Meaning to say, midos doesn't mean that he has an attribute. Right? He's trying to show you that the midos doesn't mean he has an attribute. That's not what Chazal is saying. But it's just it's an expression of certain actions that would appear in a person to emanate from a disposition. But in God, they're not emanating from any disposition. Correct? It's still a little unclear what the... So let's go through it. So it goes like this. He explains it more fully. Whenever any one of his actions is perceived by us, we ascribe to God that... it's a bad expression of it, right? What's the Hebrew saying? We describe God? Whenever any one of his actions is perceived by us, right. So he's saying we use an expression about God that describes the disposition that action would come from. Is that close enough to what you're saying over there? Right. This is bad. The English is a bad way to put it, right? We don't ascribe that emotion to God. We don't ascribe that emotion to God. But... right, and we give him... right, and call him by an epithet which is formed from the verb expressing that emotion. Right. From that pa'ula, right. That makes more sense, right? We see, for example, how well he provides for the life of the embryo of living beings, how he endows with certain faculties both the embryo itself and those who have to rear it after its birth, in order that it may be protected from death and destruction, okay, etc. Similar acts, when performed by us, are due to a certain emotion and tenderness called mercy and pity. God is therefore said to be merciful. Okay, so in other words, we see Ma'aseh Hashem affording tremendous benefit to your creation, to the creatures, right? And if a person would do something like that, we would say it's stemming from an emotion of mercy. And we call that person merciful. So we denote, we say about God, he is merciful. Because it's a description of the Maaseh Hashem. Right? Okay. Like as a father is merciful to his child, so the Lord is merciful to them that fear him. Okay. Such instances do not imply that God is influenced by a feeling of mercy. Right? So it's sort of like this funny give and take that we keep going into, right? We sort of like use the term and then pull away its real meaning, right? But that acts similar to those which a father performs for his son out of pity, mercy, and real affection emanate from God solely for the benefit of his pious men and are by no means the result of any impression or change produced in God. Right? By a person, you'd say, yeah, the father has feelings that have overcome him, and he needs to alleviate these feelings, and he does these actions. And changes are occurring. But we don't say that. We don't say any changes are occurring with regard to God. But we nonetheless say he's merciful. Right? So why? Why are we doing that? The same term is used in reference. Okay, I skipped something. When we give something to a person who has no claim upon us, we perform an act of grace. Grant them graciously unto us. Yeah.
Is there, just in terms of what you're saying about why we're using the word, it doesn't, and then just kind of action. So, is that just a question in general about why would you, like when the Rambam says we say God has, it's drawn.
Right.
So are you asking on that also? Or you're only...
No, that's different.
Right.
That's different. That's not an emotion. It's not an attribute. It's just negating the... But this is the Rambam in the beginning. This is the section where he's getting into the negative knowledge. This is sort of before the whole...
Oh, okay.
But I still think those things are different. The answer's right around the corner. I'm just leading up... The Rambam thinks the Rambam's going to give you the answer in a minute. It is a problem. It's not like my problem that I'm making up over here, and I'm going to give you my answer. I'm just setting the stage for his answer. Instances of this kind are numerous. Okay, God creates and guides, because we have to remember it's even in this very chapter, it has to relate back to Moshe in terms of the leader. Right, that's what this is all about. Okay. Instances of this kind. God creates and guides beings who have no claim upon him to be created and guided by him. He's therefore called gracious, Chanun. His actions toward mankind also include great calamities, which overtake individuals and bring death to them, or affect whole families and even entire regions, spread death, destroy generation after generation, and spare nothing whatsoever. Hence, there occur inundations, earthquakes, destructive storms. Okay. Many other evils such kind. Whenever such evils are caused by us to any person, they originate in great anger, violent jealousy, or a desire for revenge. So if a king would go and wipe out an entire country, an entire city, you would say, what's he so angry about? What's he jealous about? Why does he want so much revenge? Okay. God is therefore called, because of these acts, jealous, revengeful, wrathful, and keeping anger. That is to say, he performs acts similar to those which, when performed by us, originate in certain psychical dispositions, in jealousy, desire for retaliation, revenge, or anger. But here's the difference. God's acts are in accordance with the guilt of those who are to be punished, and not the result of any emotion. So again, we're playing. Again, we do the same format. For he is above all defect. The same is the case with all divine acts, although resembling those acts which emanate from our passions and psychical dispositions, they are not due to anything superadded to his essence. Now, this is what this is all about. The governor of a country, why did Moshe, what was Moshe's, how was Moshe's request granted? Because the governor of a country, if he is a prophet, what does he say over there on the footnote? And if he's a Navi? Yeah, I saw it this morning. I don't know what strange. It's a strange thing to say. He wants to say a Navi is Haras Shah Pi Adibor.
Yeah. It doesn't work out with other things.
Huh?
Why is he limiting it?
I don't know.
Right, but you the whole thing about,
what's he saying?
The question is, why does he say if he's a Navi? Why does Ram say the governor of a country, if he's a prophet, should conform to these attributes? Doesn't make sense what he's saying. Yeah. Right? If he's a Navi and it's a Rosh Hashanah, he's just doing Al Pi HaDibur.
Right.
I don't know why he says if he's a prophet.
Is the prophet explaining what is the RMR?
I mean, then he only if he's on that level he could really understand.
Yeah, how are you
the
anger, passion, knows, right?
Right. Okay, but this is the point. This is what I want to focus on, this part. Acts of punishment must be performed by him moderately and in accordance with justice. Okay? Not merely as an outlet of his passion. So again, the governor of a country also should act not out of his passions. He's also not acting out of his passions, right? He must not let loose his anger, nor allow his passion to overcome him. For all passions are bad, and they must be guarded against as it lies in man's power. That's a hard sentence there. As far as it lies in the man's power, that's better. Okay, at times and towards some persons, he must be merciful and gracious. Now, here's also a question in the translation. Right? The English says not only from motives of mercy and compassion. Right? The Hebrew, I think, doesn't really have the only. Not from simple feelings, right? But according to their merits. So again, the ruler also is acting in terms of their merits. At other times, and towards other persons, he must evince anger, revenge, and wrath in proportion to their guilt, not from motives of passion. Right? Not from motives of passion.
You're talking about didn't want the people to think he was acting out of revenge.
That could be. I mean, why did he not? Well, didn't he have a shua? Didn't he have a problem with shua over there?
I thought that's what it was.
Okay. I thought he made him take a shua in the spot. No, or maybe it could have been matir the nether.
I think he went over the shua while he was still alive, and he didn't kill him.
Okay, he must be able to condemn a person to death by fire without anger, right? Passion or loathing against him, and must exclusively be guided by what he perceives of the guilt of the person. And by a sense of the great benefit which a large number will derive from such a sentence. Okay? So again, he's saying that the ruler has to be cool, calm, and collected. Just has to do things again. The ruler, too, is going to be doing things that other people would say are being done out of anger. But he's also not doing them out of anger. Okay? You have no doubt noticed in the Torah how the commandment to annihilate the seven nations and to save alive nothing that breathes is followed immediately by the words that they teach you not to do after all their abominations which they have done unto their gods. So should you sin against the Lord your God. No, so it's to prevent you that you should not think that this commandment implies an act of cruelty or of retaliation. It's an act demanded by the tendency of man to remove everything that might turn him away. That's another strange translation. It is an act demanded by the tendency of man. Now, man doesn't have a tendency to remove everything that might turn him away from the right path. It's not a tendency of man.
It's like a comma
there, right? By the tendency
of man.
that is, to remove anything.
Right. No, it is an act demanded, comma, by Tenet's demand. It's therefore it's demanded to remove everything that might turn him away from the right path. Okay. And to clear away all obstacles in the road to perfection, that is to the knowledge of God. Nevertheless, acts of mercy, pardon, pity, and grace should be more frequently performed by the governor of a country than acts of punishment, seeing that all the 13 midos of God are attributes of mercy, with only one exception, namely visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children. Okay. Yeah. And that, he says, is only about idolatry. Okay. All right. One second. Yeah. So it comes out like this, that what? That how is God acting in every case? In accordance with justice, according to their merits, according to whatever they deserve. Right? And how should the governor act in every case? Also according to the merits and according to what they deserve. So why should it be taught in terms of emotional dispositions? Why should it be taught in terms of emotion? If basically it's coming out that everything is really justice, right, in accordance with whatever the individual deserves or the society demand needs, so why is it conveyed like God doing it out of emotions? And when that's not really the case, and okay, so maybe you say it's conveyed that way because man should act out of emotions. However, but that's not the case. Man's also the rule is also supposed to be acting out of just intelligence and ideas of justice.
Right,
so
right.
Just say justice. Just say justice. What are all these Yigil Midos?
That's the second question.
No, that's all the same question. What's the first question? Whatever. So what do you say? So this we did discuss a little bit, right?
I was going to be trying to say that I had just said the actions, and you would have said, okay, so the point is that before I should do the actions. But you wouldn't get this idea of doing the actions out of, you know, knowledge and, you know, control your own actions. But you would just think focus on these actions to set, even if it's out of revenge. So last one that, you know, the ruler, I mean, I don't know if there was a real hobby. So it's just trying to put the focus on alienating God insofar as
it actually emanates from. By saying in emotional terms. That's a very interesting way of... I mean, there's less of it. There's more of it. There's no other way to do it. There's no other way to do it.
I know.
What do you mean there's no other way to do it?
How else are you going to do it? How else are you going to describe it? The point is you don't want to describe it. It's the action. You have to describe it.
Obviously,
it's accurate.
But you just say be just.
Right. What if you teach him justice? Right. Yeah, it is an interesting thing. It is an interesting thing. So one thing that's interesting is he says over here, where he says in the end, he says, first of all, he says what a king must be able to do, right? What he must do. And then he says, nevertheless, acts of mercy, pardon, pity, and grace should more frequently be performed than acts of punishment. Right? So, but those punishments that are meted out severely. Right? So what we're saying is like this. We're saying that, Hashem was trying to teach Moshe What was the whole inquiry about? It was about the proper. I mean, that's what he wanted to know. He wanted to know proper governance. Right? He wanted to know proper governance. So why not say? So how did this accomplish? Proper the teaching of proper governance? It's an interesting thing. It seems like no, there's two ways to explain. It would seem there'd be two ways to explain the way a ruler should be, right? Certainly, a ruler should not be out of emotion. That's davar pasha. That's davar pasha. That to govern based on emotions is not a just system. right? But you could try to go into detail, into the details of Mishpat and explain every case and what it would demand, right? That certainly wouldn't be, that's like Daniel saying, that certainly wouldn't be describing emotions, right? That would be describing the thing itself. But what's interesting is that from the Ram, it seems like the way it was taught to Moshe was as a the whole system was there's two ways you can describe something. You can describe something internally, the way it ticks, what makes it tick, or you can take the entire thing and describe the impression that it gives you. Okay? So he's saying, what's he saying? That the system of Mishpat was described, it was given a description of what the proper system of Mishpat would look like. It would appear from the outside like the ruler was a governance of a overly merciful ruler, right? Who on severe infractions is prone to extreme anger. In other words, if you would describe as a description. Now, of course, Moshe now has to go back and think through what proper setup, working with true principles, would create a system that would appear like that. You understand? He's saying it's like a shorthand. It's like a simon. A simon of the proper system would be what if a person would look at this and describe it like a normal human, like it's run by a person. What type of a person would be doing this? But of course, see, the thing is like this: injustice is not so simple to. It's not so simple to determine exactly the degree that a person should be held accountable for his actions. That's what justice is all about. That's what Mishpat is all about. But it's not so clear how much you should forgive a person for their own frailties, or when it demands that no mercy be shown. Now, it's in terms of setting up a system itself. There are many, many different ways to draw the line on different issues. So Moshe would have to, but of course there has to be a system. So the other question that I forgot to ask is, if it's just everybody gets their merits, so what's the big chiddush over here? What do they need this nevuah for, to know that everybody should get what they deserve? Right, but you see, over here, he also says an interesting thing. He says, in terms of the avodah zarah, you have to really blot them out because of the other people. The system of justice has to balance many things. You have to take into account how tolerant you're going to be of the person, and you also have to take into account the effect that it's going to have on other people. So it's something that requires a tremendous amount of chachma, and you can't really. So the way it was conveyed to Moshe, instead of a point by point script of exactly what each action should demand, it was really an overall. It was the simon of what the thing should look like, and it was he knows that really should be tilted in favor of taking into account the frailty of man. But only when the most important issue is raised, namely a violation of Avodah Zarah, That's when you have to be. That's when you have to have strict compliance, strict justice, and then you even take into account the effect on others. All right. But the point is that. I think that's what the Ram is saying, that it's described. That's why it's described that way. It's described that way because it was the description of the system. It wasn't really the intrinsic ideas of the justice itself. So it has to be as a description. It has to be a description in terms of in the emotional. It has to use the terms of the emotion to make the description. Otherwise, the description itself. Otherwise, there's no description. So that's why it's. And he's saying, he's giving you the simon of what a. See, a simon means how you can recognize when the thing is. It's not what the thing is itself. Right? Like you say, a simon of chametz is if it's hechsifu panav or karnei chagavim. That doesn't mean that that's what chametz is. It means you want to know when the phenomenon of chametz is taking place inside this dough. Is an external simon. So in the same sense, this was a description of an ordinary king. What would the system look like? What would the proper system look like? But it's a descriptive. It's a descriptive way.
Why is it descriptive?
That's a good question. That's something we have to think about. Why it wasn't taught to Moshe on an internal, intrinsically. See, that's where the Ram comes back in his second part. That's also the other thing I wanted to take up. And that is, the Rambam says a funny thing then. Because first he says that it really has to do with leadership, right? But then in the end he says, in the second to last paragraph, he says, "We have gone too far from the subject of this chapter, but we have shown why it has been considered sufficient to mention only these 13 acts out of all his acts. Namely, because they are required for the good government of a country. For the chief aim of man should be to make himself as far as possible similar to God. That is to say, to make his acts similar to the acts of God, as our sages expressed it in explaining the verse. You shall be holy. He is gracious, so you be who? Nikra Racham, right? Afata Haye Racham. He is merciful, he is called merciful, so you should also be merciful. Yeah. Yeah. So he's saying that this type of description, it's strange, because he's saying Moshe's whole request was governance. This was all an answer in terms of governance, right? But now he's saying it also has a relevance to every individual. It also has a relevance to every individual. Now let me ask you this. This is the question I wanted to really get to. But let me ask you this. In terms of the governor, right, what's your impression from the Rambam that should the governor really, is there a place in governance for the feeling of pity and for the feeling of for these emotional dispositions? It would seem from the plain reading, it would seem no. Right, it would seem he's saying he doesn't act out of, he even said that, right? He has to do acts of mercy, but not out of mercy. Right, certainly not acts of anger out of anger. But when you go to Tadeos, where the Rambam is codifying the last part, right, how a person should behave, it seems very clear that you should, that should be your attitude. Seems clear from that, from the Rambam, that should be your attitude. You should actually be a merachem. You should have that, because he talks about deos, says there are deos, there are different extremes. He's talking about the emotion itself. The emotional disposition itself. And over there, when he's talking about the individual, he seems to be saying it is good to be to have that feeling. And I think the raya that that's true is because he differentiates kas. And he says kas is something you shouldn't have at all. Okay? And he says im rotza lahatil ema banav ubnei beso ola tzibor im hoya parnes. Even if it's really called for anger, even if it's really proper to, even if anger is a proper thing now because it's going to be used to help people correct themselves. Yireh atzmo b'fneihem shu koes, kidei liyasrom. He should just act in front of them like he's angry. V'tiyeh daitom yusheves beino levein atzmo. K'odom shu medameh koes b'shas kaso. V'ueino koes, he should fake it. Just fake the kas. But he doesn't say that by Rachmanis, he doesn't say just do acts of Rachmanis. You know, over here is the exception. This is the case where he seems to be saying that this, because it's talking about the two midos, that you shouldn't have any, that you should go to the other extreme one. So he's saying, even though you have to go to the other extreme on kas, sometimes kas really is appropriate for the people, so you have to pretend you're angry. Right? And what's the other one? The other one is anivus. You have to go to the further than just the middle. Yeah. But that was my question. In other words, how come by mishpat he seems to be taking the emotion out, but how come by the personal it sounds like you should really be a person that feels bad for other people. So, I mean, that's the impression that you get. Right. No, but over there he's saying all of those emotional descriptions are just in order to build the larger picture of how the system should be. It should be a system that if one were saying was run capriciously by an individual, we would have to say he's a soft-hearted guy that gets really angry sometimes over a limited number of things. Right. But those descriptions of Rachum and all those other things are just to help form what the system is. Just a markers. They're just indications that you have constructed the proper system of mishpat, right? Just like God's system of mishpat gives that impression, right? But it's not stemming from those emotions. So too, the proper system of mishpat that man sets up is also more in line, it's the most in line with truth, with God's ways, when the system of mishpat runs in a way that gives an impression of overriding rachmanas and severe kas on crucial issues. But not that it's really run by those emotions, right? So, but then we take the Yud Gimel Midos and we apply it to our personal life. And for some reason, when we apply it to our personal life, then we should be a Rachum. Right? Except by Kas. So how come, so these are two questions. How come by the system it should just be tools to help you, indicators to guide you to formulating proper ideas of mishpat, but the emotions don't play any role. But by the individual, it seems the emotions do play a role. But kas is also one of the Yud Gimel midos. I mean, there is also war. It's not. He says most of them are not. Most of them are kindness. But if you're going to say that we should emulate God and try to take on the emotional dispositions that are indicated in the that are described in the midos, how come that's limited? How come it's limited? Right? All right. So maybe we'll try to continue it next week. And also, Rachmanis is like a funny thing. He says it's also to be merachim on someone without das. Right, and then the emotion has to go back and forth. As the Gemara says, not allowed to be merachim. I don't know, does the Rambam mention it? It's not allowed to be merachim on a, or kol merachim al achzor is going to be right. But then the Gemara says, because God is not merachim on a nation without das. All right, we'll continue.